Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Dr. Julie Brown Yao, and we will be talking about her new book, The Body Awareness Workbook for Trauma, Release Trauma from Your Body, Find Emotional Balance, and Connect with Your Inner Wisdom. There is a piercing epidemic of trauma in the world today. Every few days, there are reports of another tragedy, of more lives lost to gun violence, loved ones and family homes lost to floods, hurricanes, or fires. Women have come to speak openly about the trauma of sexual assault, and we are finally talking openly about the trauma inflicted on people of color, on transgender people, and immigrants. Now that this trauma is out there in the open, how do we heal? For more information, you can visit Dr. Julie's website, which is Julie Brown Yao, and that's Y-A-U, .com. Julie Brown Yao. Oh, good day, Dr. Julie. Thanks for joining me today.
Hello. It's lovely to be here. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. And you know, and as I was going through and reading that introduction, talking about tragedy, boy, I mean, you know, we just see it. I mean, we have the fires and the plane going down, you know, and bombings. I mean, it's just trauma is just. When you think about it, it's just amazing how many people are experiencing trauma daily. Can you tell us a little bit about your interest in the subject and kind of what your feelings are about where we are in coping or in helping individuals work with trauma?
Yeah, well, let me begin with that last part you asked me to speak about. It's an exciting time for working with trauma. Trauma's been around since humanity has been around. And today, more than ever, I feel we understand the nature of it. And so we're better equipped to be able to heal trauma or to resolve trauma that doesn't resolve on its own. Some of us, of course, have a nervous system and a capacity for resilience so that when a traumatic event happens, we don't necessarily have to become traumatized. But there's so much happening in the world today, as you said. We're getting all kinds of vicarious trauma, which is, you know, trauma that other people are suffering, but by seeing it, or being around it or watching it on the news, sort of infiltrates its way into our lives and our nervous system. And we just get completely overwhelmed to the day-to-day pressures because there's so much buildup of, you know, maybe the traumas from our past, the traumas that are happening around us, the collective traumas. So today we know more how to address it, how to address an individual, how to address a family. So in some ways that's good news because what that does is helps us to prevent the passing on of trauma. So we know trauma is also inherited, it's intergenerational. If we don't heal our own trauma, it can tend to go pass down to our children and our children's children. So the more we begin to look at our own trauma and get on some kind of path of resolution, our healing, the more resilient we come to further trauma and the less likely we are to pass it out or further down into the world.
Yeah. There are a lot of ways that you just spoke about where we can experience trauma on a lot of different levels. So is trauma easily identified, or the question is, how does one even recognize that they're being traumatized?
That's a great question. So trauma emerges in our body. Trauma lives in our body. It's not the traumatic event out there, but a traumatic event obviously will cause trauma to emerge in our body, in our nervous system, in our brain. And then unless we get the attention that we need to resolve it, it can stay in our body. So really any event that feels really overwhelming, where we may disconnect from our emotions or disconnect from our body or even our core self, can create trauma. For those who aren't that familiar with trauma, that might sound a little gobbledygook. It might not make a whole lot of sense. So let me speak about it a different way. Let's say there's, a car accident. We know that's a huge event. It can really shake us up inside. And if we don't get what we need at the time, which would maybe be somebody to look us in the eye, to help us feel calm or hold our hand, to get the physical or medical attention that we need in a very kind and calming way, we may not get through that car accident, the trauma of that, in the way that we would like to. And if we don't understand about trauma, we might not realize that that trauma has stayed in our body after the event is over. A lot of people have a traumatic event. It could be the loss of a loved one. It could be some kind of accident. It could be a fall. It could be a surgery. You know, the list goes on. And they don't realize they're suffering from trauma. But weeks or months later, and sometimes even years later, they can begin to experience symptoms of headaches, of anxiety, of panic, of not being able to sleep, of their body feeling really, you know, constricted or tight or uncomfortable. And what happens is our mind gets informed by how we're feeling. And so the mind is trying to make sense of something that may have happened months ago or even years ago when we were children with what's around us right now. And that's when trauma can get really tricky, because we start to look at our partners or our work or our life situations and start blaming all of that for how we feel. But really, it's these internal states that are not resolved that are coming up for some kind of resolution. So it's a really good idea, I think, if we have any kind of symptoms, you know, some of the ones that I've just mentioned, stomach issues and depression, that we don't just look for medication to make us feel better, but to really also explore on a psychological and somatic, which is the body level, just to see if there is any unresolved trauma there, just so we're not, you know, overlooking something that could actually help us transform.
Yeah. So now, in the case of, like you mentioned, the car accident, there can be physical trauma, emotional trauma, and I don't know where we are with spiritual trauma,
trauma
on that level. Yeah, so one incident can then generate trauma in three different kind of ways. So when dealing with, let's say, the trauma from the accident, do you, is it kind of like physical first, or do you deal with the whole
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know if there's a recipe that we can apply after every traumatic event, because they're all so different. But that's a great question. After a car accident, if everybody's safe and there's no danger, if we could just sit down, you know, on the side of the road and take a few deep breaths and really attend to the physical body. So, you know, if you look at somebody's eyes, if you make contact and that person's really calm, that really helps our body to calm. And what might happen after an accident, a fall, some kind of a shock trauma, is then our body might begin to shake or tremble a little bit. And that's a really good thing, but people find it really frightening because they don't know. And what's happening is that traumatic energy that came up to help us, you know, flee or fight our way to safety, that will come up in any kind of accident or shock, begins to disperse from our body, and then the body gets really calm again, you know, which may allow us to be more in touch with our emotions, right? So then we might cry, wow, that was really upsetting, I got a big fright, that was really fearful. And if we can allow ourselves to cry about that, that also helps to integrate the emotion, right? We don't have to push it off and put it away. Where it gets stored in the body, it doesn't just diminish on its own. So maybe you're right. Maybe there is a way, if we can feel the body first, because if we can stay connected to the body and release the shock energy, we're more able to feel the body, to feel the emotions that might have come up. And then we can really deeply connect to ourselves, the sort of the core of our being. And that could be sort of the spiritual aspect. I mean, they're all interwoven, where we say, okay, I'm safe. You know, I know I'm okay. I'm trusting this is, you know, an okay experience, and so forth.
Yeah.
But the other thing that can happen is something like a shock trauma, which I think is really important for people to understand. Let's stick with the car accident, even if it's, you know, a fender bender, but we have to get out, we sit down. What that can do is dislodge earlier traumas that might be stuck in our body that we may not be aware of. So let's say somebody had a lot of early trauma, and let's talk about that in a little bit. If that hasn't been resolved and it's still living in the body, you know, many of us aren't aware of it, but some kind of accident, fall, surgery can bring up the past traumas. And so it becomes really confusing, because here we are a week after a car accident feeling all kinds of emotions, strange sensations in our body, our thoughts might be a little bit erratic, and we can't make sense of it. And the sense of it is, that shock to your system sort of opened up a portal, if you will, for the past to come flooding through for healing.
Wow, okay. Now, are some people, I mean, granted, this is, it's subjective, the experience of trauma, you know, is unique to each individual. Mm-hmm. Are people more prone? I mean, would someone be more, if someone experiences trauma, are they kind of more prone to, you know, like some people are attracted to drama, you know, if they don't have mm-hmm. trauma, great drama. Is it the same for trauma? I mean, because, you know, what I'm wondering is that, you know, if someone, you just mentioned about the car accident may have dredged up something from, you know, from early trauma. I'm just wondering if someone who has that early trauma, are they kind of, is it just waiting for a trigger to bring it to the forefront?
Possibly. It, okay. You know, I would say almost certainly, because the resilience then in our nervous system, and by resilience I mean it's the capacity to cope with life events without getting overwhelmed, without it feeling too much. So if we have a lot of unresolved trauma in our body, you know, in our brain, in our nervous system, it's really all one thing. I'll just say body from now on. If we have a lot of unresolved trauma in our body, it is going to make us more susceptible to being traumatized later in life. And the nature of trauma also is repetitious. So we seem to experience similar types of events in our life. It might be different people, different places, you know, different faces, but it has a similar taste of a pattern that we've been repeating over and over again. And often that emerges or arises from what we call early trauma or developmental trauma, which is different than the shock trauma that we've just been speaking about. Have a lot of... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, I can see where that susceptibility might be there. Now, since you mentioned, you know, shock trauma versus early trauma, is there a different approach to dealing with the different type of trauma?
Yeah, that is. I'm glad you said that. Even though the symptoms of both early developmental trauma or shock trauma or acute trauma, you know, are similar, so we can have the same symptoms, we approach it very differently. The way that we look at developmental trauma, it's not necessarily the obvious things that I'm sure all of your listeners know about. You know, there's so many different types of abuse children can go through, which is so traumatizing, it's so horrific and heartbreaking, or the surgeries that children can go through, the losses. You know, all of the types of acute or shock traumas that we've talked about can happen to children. what people aren't so familiar with is the traumas that occur from us not receiving what we need to receive as children. And when I say that, I mean the basic needs or the essential needs, they're not so basic, the very essential needs that all infants and children need. And they are to be held, to be feel loved, to feel like we are seen and heard, to experience delight in our parents' or our caregivers' eyes, you know, to feel nurtured, and to be attuned to. So, you know, often we can't express when we're very young what it is that we need. So we need a parent to be attuning to our needs, to be able to help us self-soothe, to be able to hold us when we need holding. If we don't get that, and it's repetitive, meaning we don't get it a lot, our parents, for whatever reason, are unable to attend to us in the way that we need, we can become traumatized, meaning we shut down our emotions, we can split off from our body, we can even fragment if in our psyche if the trauma is too much, and we can live a life disconnected from our emotions in our body and not even really know until much later on. But because of that, it creates this idea or this sense that we are more vulnerable or more susceptible to other traumas later in life.
Yeah. Okay. Now, this is a workbook. Your book that I just mentioned is
yes.
a workbook. So what... Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, kind of what inspired you to write about this in the workbook form?
Yes. That is so much trauma, as you spoke about earlier, in the world today. I think every one of us as a human being is dealing with some level of trauma. Some, you know, are having more difficulty with it than others. There's so much more information about trauma available to us today, but there's not that much information available to the layperson. Not everybody has the resources or the desire to go to a trauma therapist or a somatic therapist to be able to work through trauma. So I was asked to create a workbook after some talks I gave, and I realized what a great idea that was. First, I was a little hesitant because trauma, it can be so complex that trying to work on it on our own can be a little bit difficult. It's often relational. You know, trauma happens in relationship with another, and often we need that someone to heal. But I'd actually gone through so much, a three-year period of a lot of trauma from my husband's side of the family, and I was so grateful for everything that I knew about trauma to keep my own nervous system and my daughter's nervous system in a calm and loved and held space so we didn't become traumatized by it. And I realized, wow, if people have this information and ways to work with themselves or each other, it could save a tremendous amount of pain. And it could also, for people who, you know, prefer to work on their own, there's such a range of exercises and practices that people can find that it could really change the trajectory of their life if that's what they're looking for. So I put it together, and I've had some amazing and really beautiful responses from people on how it's really helping them in their lives and with their families and partners and so forth.
Well, that's great, you know, and you're right, you know, a lot of people either don't have the resources or just not the inclination, maybe initially, you know, to go to someone to work through that. So in a way, I think your workbook is probably a, you know, for those individuals, you know, it would be a great way to kind of step their toe into the water, you know, looking at the trauma.
Yes, yeah, it is. And then also I have a lot of colleagues who use the workbook with their patients as well. So it's something that people can work with a therapist or with a coach or, you know, with a buddy. It's nice, I think, you know, I mean, people can do it on their own, absolutely, because I feel like I put myself in the book. So some way, in the feedback that I've got, people are saying, yeah, I can feel you in the book. I feel your compassion. I feel your understanding. So that was my intention when I wrote it, that people didn't feel alone when they were doing the workbook. But if you can do it with somebody as well, it's wonderful. You know, we're such relational beings, we're so interdependent that it is nice to be able to share it.
Now, this would be not necessarily, I mean, if it was with an individual, it wouldn't be with that individual, I would think. Correctly?
Sorry, I'm not sure I understand.
Well, I mean, if you have, like you mentioned, father or family. I mean, if you were experiencing trauma in relation to an individual, working with them, would the book help you?
No, this is not about working with somebody who you might be in conflict with. No.
Thank you.
I'm glad you clarified. This is more a workbook where it's really a self-exploration.
Okay.
But before we go like really deep into self-exploration when we're working with trauma, we really want to make sure we feel somewhat safely connected to our bodies. So initially the book does some what could be thought of as very basic work, but it's the foundation of great depth. And I've worked with people who have, you know, been on a spiritual and psychological healing path for many years, and they've done a tremendous amount of work, but they haven't done some of these foundational practices like creating safety in the body, feeling connected to the body. And so the work that they do doesn't hold as strong as it would if they have these foundational practices and exercises that have really created structures. So when fears come up and old patterns fall away, they can stay grounded and connected. So I do that in the book, and I feel these are some of the most important things we can do. And then the book goes into some deeper, more colorful, rich exercises to experience.
Yeah, great. Well, you know, I want to take just a quick break, Dr. Julie, and invite listeners, if they want to call in and ask a question, they can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions for Dr. Julie, feel free to type them in there. And then when we come back, I want to go ahead and then jump in and talk about some of the topics in your workbook so that the listener will really get a good idea. Okay?
Wonderful. Okay.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,400 shows we have had over the past 9 years. Also on the site is a link to the products and services we provide: books, photography, a wellness store, and self-publishing assistance. Our show is a free podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can subscribe for free on any of those platforms by using the links on our website homepage. We are on many social media platforms: Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms at the top of our home page. Our website, biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Dr. Julie Brown Yao, and we are talking about her new workbook, The Body Awareness Workbook for Trauma: Release Trauma from Your Body, Find Emotional Balance, and Connect with Your Inner Wisdom. And again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is juliebrownyao.com. That's Julie Brown and YAU.com. Okay, with that, we're back. Dr. Julie?
Hi.
Hi, okay. So I want to kind of walk through just a couple of the points that you cover that I know that the listeners would be interested in, because I was interested in. First, you start with talking about gently exploring one's trauma. Now,
mm-hmm.
with just by the nature of the word and the experience our body goes through, I would think that exploring that would be a very difficult thing to do. So, I mean, how can one gently explore?
What I mean by gently is to not, you know, be sitting and diving into the worst experiences that you might have had in your life to see what might be there. But to, you know, just to be gentle and think, you know what, when I was 3, I remember this happened. Okay, when I was 8, that happened. When I was 24, that happened. And to just gently to begin to, not gently, to begin to write those down, I believe, is the what you're talking about. So I'm doing it in a way where I'm not encouraging people to do a deep dive into any kind of trauma, but to note carefully what they already know, to note any little changes in the breath or sensation or bodies as they do so. What I'm helping people to do is to make a deeper connection with their body. Often in trauma, we disconnect from our body because, you know, the shock is too much, the feelings and emotions are too intense, there was fear or terror in the moment, and we just didn't have the ability to cope. So by gently reconnecting with our body, meaning, okay, what do I notice? Okay, there's a contraction. Okay, there's some numbness. Okay, there's some constriction or tightness. And just to write that down, that's really being gentle with ourselves as opposed to diving in and going, oh, there's this contraction and inside it's black and it makes me want to die. And, you know, because people can go there without some kind of guidance or boundaries to say, you know, let's do this first. Or anger, for instance, you know, if we're exploring our body and meaning, you know, paying attention to the body and somebody is feeling angry and we jump into that anger, there can be rage in there, and that can just overwhelm us or re-traumatize us if it comes up too much, too quickly before we are a little bit more connected to the body or a lot more connected to the body.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
So, yeah, no, it does. And, you know, and I'm glad you brought up anger because I would think, you know, that is probably one of the most intense emotions that an individual, you know, would experience. And is there a way to use that anger to transform anger, or is this, you know, in the healing process, is it to kind of really achieve that level of healing, is do we need to kind of release the anger? How does anger
anger. No, it's a huge topic. You know, it's like, what do we do with anger?
really?
And you're right, anger is one of the most intense emotions, and it often is related to rage. They're slightly different animals, if you will. And there's 3 ways, if I speak about it really basically, that we are with anger. One is we act it out. And we've probably all done that a little bit in our lives where anger comes up, it whips out, we really didn't mean to do it, you know, say what we said, but it just comes up and out of us because, you know, it's stored inside and we may not be aware of it. There's, you know, and then some people live their lives acting anger out. They're always angry. They're angry people, you know, and some people might go get help for that, some people won't. We can act anger in, which is a little bit more insidious, if you will, because we're not so aware of it. But if we've had a lot of responses when we're young, and this can be all the way from infancy, where we felt anger, usually we don't have the capacity or the wherewithal of our parents to help guide us through this human emotion of anger in a very embodied and loving way. So our relationship to anger gets distorted, right? So it either feels too much, it's very scary, so we cut it off or split it off or push it down where we don't have to feel it. Unfortunately, it's still affecting us unconsciously. Or we, you know, we are told don't get angry, or angry is bad, or we see angry people around us and we create this own idea in our heads that anger is terrible. So our relationship to anger gets distorted. And rather than acting it out, we act it in, and that shows up in a form of self-loathing, self-criticism, worthlessness, self-hatred, that are, again, a little bit, let me use the word insidious, because you can't see it. Mm-hmm. People don't often realize there's some self-hatred there. But in the actions, what they do to themselves, they are not being self-loving and self-honoring. You know, the self-criticism that's running through the head can often come from unresolved anger. Now, in a healing process or a healthy relationship to anger, I mean, it can be a very creative force, but if we could actually feel that emotion as it comes up in our body in the moment and are okay with feeling it, we don't have to act it out. We don't have to act it in. If we need that anger to get ourselves to safety, because ultimately our anger was a response to that, you know, derived from the sympathetic nervous system and a response to danger where we feel we can't run to safety. So the next way we get to safety is to fight. Now, we don't need that fight response so much in life anymore, but the anger still emerges. So if we can just feel it, it sort of rewires back into our body as life force, if you will, and it doesn't become distorted. So that's difficult, though, because if we've disconnected from our body and anger comes up, it's not just anger in the moment of whatever the situation is, you know, when we're 35. We have a whole lifetime of unresolved anger that tries to come up with that in the moment. So it feels completely overwhelming. It feels completely out of context. You know, maybe a lot of your listeners have had the experience of responding in anger that was so much bigger than the situation called for. And it's really confusing, you know. And then we blame ourselves or we blame others, you know, or we beat ourselves up. You know, the anger turns back in towards us. It's a really confusing emotion if you really don't understand the nature of it. So in healing trauma, we have to be very careful. I think it was Carl Jung said something like unresolved emotions from our childhood can burst through into conscious awareness and be like an animal or a wild animal or an enemy. And sometimes that's what happens with anger. It bursts through, explodes out of us, and then it doesn't resolve itself because it's, you know, it's acting out, and then it comes back down inside of us. So we really want to be very careful with anger in resolving it, that we don't have that experience of this wild animal coming out of us and overwhelming us and re-traumatizing us.
Yeah, definitely want to not have that animal come out. Now, one of the things, you know, you were mentioning overwhelm. You know, and I know in your workbook you also deal with the idea of kind of navigating overwhelm. And you indicate one way to do that is with healthy boundaries. You know, I as I was going through and reading this, it was a kind of a, for me, it was just a new perspective, you know, because I think everyone has experienced, you know, that sense of overwhelm. And I was trying, you know, to recall the times, you know, that I've done that and tried to identify, you know, where boundaries would have helped with that. So can you maybe, for those who out there who are listening, who do experience that occasional sense of being overwhelmed, in today's society, I'm sure there's a lot more feeling that. How do boundaries help with that navigation?
Okay, so it can certainly help with overwhelm. It's not the end all to overwhelm, but it's really a great beginning to have strong boundaries. So again, if we go back to any kind of trauma, especially early trauma, our energetic boundaries get ruptured. So we know we have energetic boundaries. Everybody will be able to experience them. It's scientifically documented and proven and so forth. We have energetic boundaries. When we have a trauma or a traumatic event, they can be ruptured, if you will, through a car accident, a fall, you know, an explosion of emotion, and a difficult birthing process. And any time when we're young, when we begin to feel overwhelmed when we're babies, right, or small children, we need our parents' love to be our boundary, if you will, to help us stay connected to self-soothe. So these energetic boundaries can get ruptured. And if we have a rupture in our boundaries, we're more susceptible to trauma. We're less resilient because we don't feel so connected to our body. We don't feel so safe in our body. And we might be more sensitive to the environment than we need to be. Because if they're still ruptured in our boundaries, there's still unresolved trauma. So by building up energetic boundaries, and I go over many exercises in the book or a few exercises in the book where we can do this, it begins to feel safer to feel your body. So remember, in trauma, we disconnect from our body because something didn't feel safe, right? We disconnect. It's almost a life-saving mechanism that we have. What doesn't happen, though, is once the danger is over, we don't automatically reconnect until we attend to our bodies and attend to our emotions. So for a lot of people, really being in the body is a frightening experience. And it's not always obvious if you're disconnected. For some people it is, others it's not. So we want to create boundaries because they give us a protection, if you will. It means we're not so sensitive to the environment. We're not so sensitive to other people's emotions. We're not so sensitive to what's happening around us. We have this protective energetic boundary that allows us to feel mostly our own space. Right? Everybody's had the experience when somebody stands a little bit too close to them and it's uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah. And different people can stand different differences, personal space. That has everything to do with our boundaries. So if you have ruptured boundaries, you're feeling all of these other people's, and some people you sense danger, some people you sense fear. It can be overwhelming. So by creating strong boundaries, we come back and can feel safe in our own body. When we're safe in our own body, we're less sensitive to the environment and more resilient to it, and then are more able to resolve trauma. So when I've worked with people, the exercises are really simple, and they're so surprised at the difference between creating a boundary and having a boundary and not having a boundary. It's subtle, but it's strong. It's a little paradoxical, if you will. but it really helps people.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the one thing that, when it comes to boundaries, I know a number of people who, have difficulties with setting boundaries, and they really allow themselves to be, really influenced, by, other people in situations, and it can wreak havoc. So now, one of the other areas in the workbook you talked about.
Before you go on, though.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would just love to say, because what you said is really important. It's a little bit of a different aspect about a boundary, about people who overstep boundaries, that don't have good boundaries in their languaging, right? Because that's a little bit of a different thing. So I have I have exercises in the book that teach people how to set up that boundary with their voice, to say no or to say stop. And being able
to do that
can help the nervous system recalibrate itself for them to be able to feel safer in the real world, to be able to say no and to be able to create those boundaries with other people so they don't begin to feel exhausted or resentful and taken advantage of and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah,
I just wanted to add that in because it's important.
Well, no, I'm glad that you did. It's one of the things that, when it comes to I was one of those individuals who had, difficulty, setting up boundaries, and it was helpful for me to have terminology or ways of setting them that I was comfortable with, you know. And, you know, it sounds, mm-hmm. I mean, with the workbook and with offering different ways of, you know, to instruct people on how to set those boundaries where they may not have existed before, is, to me, it's just it's a wonderful tool. Because, you know, it's one of those things where if you have difficulty, in my case, 60 years worth of having problems or difficulty setting up boundaries, you know, it's going to be difficult to shift. Well, may not be difficult, but it, you know, the idea of shifting my my approach, my wording, my tone, to make sure the boundaries are communicated, it wouldn't have been a natural thing for me to do. So, or I wouldn't have known where to begin. So it's really good to be able to have that from your workbook. Now,
just also to be able to, if I could just like link something like not being able to set boundaries for ourselves, you know, being taken advantage of by other people, not really knowing when to say no. If I could relate that, and I'm not talking about your experience, I'm talking about generally,
right.
when
mm-hmm.
this issue comes up, we can trace that back to about a year to 2 years old in life. And so this is, I think, what's really helpful for people to understand, well, where did this pattern come from? Why do I do that? And, you know, the person next to me doesn't. And, or why does the person next to me take advantage of me when I do this? So it's one thing to make strong boundaries. And then it's another piece to have insight and a recalibration, I guess, of our nervous system in the way of being when we realize where this pattern may have come from. Excuse me, I just need to take a drink of water.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
When we're young, I was talking earlier about these essential needs. If we aren't attuned to in the way that we need to be attuned to, meaning, you know, we have needs, but those needs are not getting met by our caregivers, it becomes really, really painful for us as children. So we shut down our needs. Right? We shut down that ability to be able to speak up for ourselves. And what we do is we start to attend to our mother or our father more than ourselves, because it, you know, it felt too painful when we had needs because nobody was attuning or attending to us. And that can set off this lifelong pattern of always attending to everybody else, not even knowing when we have needs, but building up a lot of resentful. Because we're like, wow, I'm saying yes to everybody. Nobody's doing anything for me. Right? But inside, it's because of this pattern that we've got set up. It's actually, unconsciously, it doesn't feel safe to say no. So there's a whole lot more exploration, but that's a little nuance of
recognizing
patterns in adulthood. Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And you know, it obviously really is important to get to an understanding of the origin, you know. Otherwise, it's going to rear its ugly head later on. And one of the things that also in your book you talk about is imagining your trauma differently. You know, and it seems mm-hmm. that, you know, that the idea of going in and exploring, you know, trauma and going back to the source would then be kind of like the beginning stepping stone, I guess, or the beginning point of being able to imagine it differently or to shift the perception of it.
Correct. We give our body and our brain, our nervous system, our whole being, a different experience right now of an event that happened in the past. Of course, we can't make the past go away, but the past is gone.
No.
It's just living in our body right now. So a safe and gentle way for people to work with trauma is to begin to imagine something different. So we go to the traumatic event. We don't dive into it, especially if we're on our own and not used to working with trauma. You know, I guide people, don't go to the most, you know, horrific experience of your life. Do something somewhat tolerable.
Right.
You know, some people are
really
gung-ho on healing.
I'm a light.
Yeah, it's like, okay, let's try this out first. You know, be gentle with yourself. be compassionate. Yeah. So we remember something frightening that might have happened. And rather than sitting in terror, you know, we imagine that we're able to run to safety, or we imagine we're able to fight our way to safety, or we imagine, somebody loving comes and holds us and soothes us. So what we're actually doing in these imaginative exercises in the book, the ones that you're talking about here, are to help us give our body the experience of coming out of the traumatic situation in a way where we get everything that we need to heal, which is connection with another, feeling safe, being with our body, being held, and so forth. And then there's other exercises later on using the imagination where we can be more in touch with maybe our innate qualities of who we are as a human being and to be able to express those safely. Because what trauma does, it really shuts down our most authentic expression of who we are in our, you know, at our soul level or our heart level, whatever language, you know, people may use.
Yeah, now, when it comes to healing trauma, one of the questions I have can one consider themselves, when is one healed? Is that when the thought or the experience no longer generates the old pattern and then is replaced with a new positive pattern?
That's a great question. You know, one of my teachers used this phrase, and I love it. We are all a work in progress. So it's almost as if as long as we're living, you know, we're this great work of art that is never complete. Now, can we completely heal from trauma? I feel we can heal a tremendous amount of some of the deepest traumas from all the way back into the womb, you know, because I've seen it happen a lot. So I'm a great believer in, you know, trauma can be healed. Some traumas can be healed completely where there's no trace of it left. There's no energy around it. There's no thought about it. It's just, it's gone. We have a whole new life narrative. Maybe that's not going to happen for everybody, but I think it can. But what we do notice is symptoms go away. So that anxiety, the fear, the headaches, that sense of doom or gloom in our body, the withdrawing, the nightmares, the isolation, the erratic thoughts, you know, all of those symptoms and more begin to diminish and then dissolve and then go away. We begin to react with people in a more open and authentic way. You know, we're able to speak our truth. We're able to hear the truth. We're able to see people and feel people and feel that way about ourselves. So who we are and our relationship to ourselves and others begins to radically shift. And we begin to feel a lot more alive and joyous, like internally, because trauma takes away our life force, if you will, because it's holding down our emotions. It's keeping anger at bay. You know, it's keeping us out of our body. So when we resolve trauma, we naturally get more energy, more vitality, and just feel better about who we are in the world.
Yeah. I could see where that, you know, that would be the case. And you know, I was, because, you know, I've often wondered that, you know, really our traumatic experience, or like that work in progress, you know, traumatic experience that we have, it's part of us. I mean, you know, there is that, there is experience and there is that negative, debilitating kind of place that it can hold. But if we've gotten to the point where, you know, we're no longer having those symptoms of trauma, and we can recall it and kind of put it in its place in a way, then to me it seems that, I mean, I don't think one, well, by healing it, one doesn't deny that it didn't happen or doesn't take away from
it. No.
Being a part of one's experience.
No. What often happens is people will say, you know what, that was such a horrific experience, but somehow it shaped my life and I see the gift in it. Now, that's sometimes really difficult for people initially, and I don't normally say that to people, but I hear it so much while people are resolving the trauma. Like, wow, if it wasn't for that, I never would have discovered this part of my own being, right? Or this joy or this love or this capacity of love. So, we don't want to deny it happened because it did happen, but it's in the past.
Yeah.
People's life story begins to change, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, because, I've had, over the last 10 years, I've had so many people whose life path and really fulfillment really shifted at the point of a trauma or tragedy, you know? And, you know, that's one of those things where, when a parent loses a child and they start a fund or something, you know, in that child's name. You know, to me, it's one of those cases where it seems that it can be a catalyst, I guess, for jump-starting awareness, self-awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. Trauma can be a turning point in our lives where the trajectory can change into something much more positive. But we do need to address the pain and the emotions and the disconnection that comes with trauma. And we can do it simultaneously. We can be recognizing that we can do some good for ourselves or in the world with this tragedy, simultaneously working through the pain. I really feel that if we deny pain or stuff it down, it haunts us or haunts our children. And these deep emotions that emerge from trauma or that trauma calls for, you know, grief, anger, sadness, these are human emotions that are really important as a human being to be able to feel and express as much as joy and happiness and a sense of freedom. So these what we think of as more negative emotions, they're not good or bad, they're just a little bit more challenging maybe to feel, sometimes can feel so insurmountable to people that they're afraid to feel them. But when we do, they're liberated. You know, anger can transform and liberate through us. Grief, sadness. As we feel it and are present to it, it frees from our, you know, so-called past and the present and allows us to be much more present in the moment because our body isn't fighting with memories from the past that it hasn't resolved.
Yeah, very much so. And you know, the idea of not passing it on, I mean, I have seen many examples of, you know, of trauma and reactions, you know, how it, certain family lines, you know, that it just impacts, you know, the DNA. It seems like it impacts the DNA.
Science now that shows that trauma can be passed down for three generations. That's what we show scientifically. Could be more.
I know. Yeah, I give my grandfather a few choice words every now and then. Why didn't you solve that when you hit the time? And for parents out there,
I know.
Stop it now. Stop it now. Don't pass it on. Yeah. Well, yeah. Julie, what do
I
you...
I was with a wonderful person yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
I just wanted to say this quickly. I was with a lovely person yesterday, and they said, you know, I want to heal this now so my children don't have to. And it was so deeply from her heart, you know, and it's so wonderful. And, you know, I said the same thing about myself before I had children, and I didn't know what I was talking about 35 years ago. Like, whatever this is, you know, I'm going to heal this. So nobody else has to, you know, in my family and my lineage. And it's quite a courageous call. I don't think we quite know what we're in for when we do it, but I believe if that call or that insight is within us, it's because, you know, maybe that's part of our destiny to do that.
Yeah, you know, and I just think that it's, you know, wonderful to be able to recognize that what you do today, you know, the work that you do today will, you know, influence you know, your genetics in generations to come. So, I mean, it's like right now you have the power to change the future in a way. So, So what do you hope that people will take away from using your workbook? And I know you said you've gotten some feedback. Can you tell us maybe, you know, just some of the feedback, some of the examples of, you know, what people have gotten from using the Body Awareness Workbook?
So a lot of people find a great sense of relief when they read through it because it begins to make sense of their life. So there's a lot of knowledge in the book as well. I've written it pretty simply just meaning easily understandable if you're not working or living in the field of psychology. So I've written it in a way where it's easily digestible, and people say they have so many aha moments, like, oh my gosh, that's my experience, that's what's going on with me. And it's such a relief to not feel like you're a little crazy inside, you know, we all like, oh my gosh, why am I feeling this way or that way?
Right.
And it normalizes people's experiences. It also brings people a lot of hope. Like, I have so much hope for my future, people will say, that I can work with these symptoms, I can work with these issues, whether people are 20 or in the 60s, and they're saying that I can actually address it, I can face this, I don't have to feel alone, that there is hope, that there is help out there. That's something else I hear. And then I hear a lot, which I thought was really interesting, that people will say, wow, I felt like I got a transmission through the book of healing just by being with it. That's very subjective experience. I heard it such a lot that I thought it's worth mentioning that somehow something is coming through the book, and maybe it was my passion, my love for this type of work that people are actually feeling, and that's resonating at some level and beginning to make a change.
That's great. Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. I've read works of friends of mine, and I can just feel them while I'm reading the book. Well, Dr. Julie, thank you very much for your time today. I really enjoyed talking with you. I'm going to look at trauma differently. and I really appreciate you spending your time talking with us about that today.
Well, thank you for having me on and allowing me to talk about trauma and to talk about my book as well. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dr. Julie Brown Yao. We've been talking about her new book, workbook, The Body Awareness Workbook for Trauma, Release Trauma from Your Body, Find Emotional Balance, and Connect with Your Inner Wisdom. And again, you can find out more by visiting Dr. Julie's website, which is juliebrownyao.com. It's Julie Brown and then YAU.com. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Remember, our show is available as a free podcast from Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. To follow our show, visit our homepage at biteradio.me and select the platform you use most. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. Until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.